Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio program was brought to you by, we'll find out in a sec, Fairway Market. I think we have two in the city, Red Hook and one in Manhattan.
Two in Manhattan.
Every week on Hot Grease, we bring sustainability, local foods, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thoughts to the minds and kitchens of everyday folks. Our conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking New York City Food and Climate Summit wrap-up and the Hot Five. On December 12th, 1,000 people gathered in New York to create a platform for change. The Food and Climate Summit, hosted by Scott Stringer, NYU, and Just Food, was a perfect way to begin a new decade. In the studio, we have a roundtable to discuss the summit planning, public policies, and skill-building sessions and good food wishes for 2010. Welcome, Lexi Van Duwal, Mara Giltman, and on the phone we have Melissa Danielle. Welcome to Hot Grease, guys.
Hey, thanks,
Nicole. Thank you.
First up, let's talk the summit planning. Lexi, I think you were involved in the steering committee. Give us the components and some of the organizations that were involved in putting together such a great event.
Well, it's interesting. The planning really was started out as two different conferences. One was going to be the Manhattan Borough President's Conference as a follow-up to the food politics event that he did last year. And the second conference was the biannual Just Food Conference that they do every year.
Gotcha.
And actually working with both organizations, it was really great for me because they ended up merging the event probably around late summer. And joined forces, which made it, I think, a lot smarter and a lot easier for everybody to work on.
Oh, I didn't realize that that's how the conference came together. Actually, Scott Stringer, Manhattan Borough President, was on Heritage Radio Network. He actually did a special being interviewed by Patrick about his plans for New York City in terms of food as well as the conference. So, Melissa, this conference was a perfect idea to connect Copenhagen and what's going on in New York. And you facilitated a great session titled The Food Car Economy. Give us some of the highlights of that session.
Oh, well, the Food Car Economy had panelists representing Hot Bread Kitchen, which is a community kitchen incubator for women to start their own food businesses. We had a representative from the local food workers union, whose official title I can't remember, and also Mark Winston Griffith, who recently ran for city council.
Yeah,
he's been on the 36th district.
He's been on the show before. He was on one of the shows talking about.
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a great conversation on where we felt New York City's food economy stood in terms of sustainability and access and inclusion. But unfortunately, I think that the participants were looking for more from the panelists, so we didn't really get to a full consensus on what we felt New York City needed, but they did bring up some great points in terms of having training for both employers and employees on best practices, for having the city government subsidize or help institutions procure food from local farm economies in New York State and from the region. And so some of those things, you know, those were the highlights, and those are definitely were the things that, you know, a lot of the participants agreed on and were bringing up.
So I'm curious to know from either Lexi or Mara, yeah. What I was in one session and we broke off into groups. Did every session or every informational one, some of them were like informational ones and some of them were like working sessions. Did you guys break off into groups or is it just the panel talking?
I was in one called Growing Food in the Big Apple with a really wonderful NYU professor named Jennifer Berg.
And, oh, yeah.
It was a small enough group for it to be a bit of a discussion. It was just her on the panel, and she gave a really nice presentation on all the different ways that one could go about growing food in while living in a city, no matter what type of living situation you have, even if you just have a windowsill. And so a bunch of the people in the audience were food growers, were urban food growers.
Gotcha.
And so we got to ask each other questions, and audience members answered them.
Wow, because my group, the session I attended, the structural discrimination in the food system, there were, I swear, about 200 people. Your group was,
yeah, that
really
was a
small.
Big one.
Oh, wow. So, Lexi, which session did you attend?
Well, I attended two, and one of them was a skill-building session, and the other one was a policy session, and they were run quite differently, actually. The skill-building session I went to was actually one I helped organize, which is tips on talking about animal food and the impact that food has on climate change. And that tended to be a little bit more educational and somewhat interactive, but really designed to give people a skill that they could walk away with to learn how to either write an op-ed piece or talk to a legislator, something like that. Whereas the session that I went to that was billed as a policy session was on the food shed. And
gotcha.
That was a, you know, very quick sort of panel session, and then we broke off into teams, and all the participants in the room had to work real hard, and it was very much like a brainstorming, and there were lots of note takers taking things back to the borough president's office, really to affect change in the city and build policy.
So, Melissa, did you find in the sessions that you attended and facilitated that people were making a correlation to Copenhagen, or was that just kind of the backdrop of the entire summit?
I actually did not attend any of the workshops because it turned out that the workshops that I was interested in were running at the same time as the workshop I had to facilitate. So I ended up staying in the Twitter room where I was able to simultaneously watch some of the talks that were, discussions that were going on in Copenhagen along with the Twitter feed, like following what people were tweeting about their experiences at the summit. I didn't really see that much of a connection between the two, but because in the plenary we did have those two videos from Vandana Shiva and from Wangari Maathai, that, you know,
exactly.
people were appreciative and grateful that of their presence at the summit, even if it was by video, and some made connections to what was said in those videos, in those podcasts, in the sessions that they were in. But there, I didn't notice too much happening, at least in the Twitter exchange, from what was happening at Copenhagen.
It's funny, all four of us on the round table, or me hosting the show, Lexi, Mara, is it Mara or Mara?
It's Mara.
Mara. Thank you for correcting, Melissa. All of us are on Twitter, and I was tweeting the entire time of the conference, and it was amazing just to see. Some people were very frank in mm-hmm. their Twitter responses about the sessions, about the organizing of the event, and I just want to hear y'all's thoughts about some of the tweets that you read.
Well, I recall that we had a pretty interesting Twitter conversation. But in terms of being frank, while I was in the structural discrimination panel, I actually was sitting next to the borough president and got to kind of run some ideas by him. Well, I'm sure it's nothing that he's never heard before, but I tweeted about that and got a couple of responses right away asking for more details.
Wow. Amazing.
But
Lexi, did you walk away from the summit feeling excited and energized about using the information in your current food system work?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, if you look at what the objective of the summit was, is really to energize people and to really mobilize people around the issues. And, you know, if you think about the way the day was set up, a lot of it was, you know, designed for the introductory to food and climate change. And much of it was really also designed for people who were already expert and very involved in the food system. And in terms of communications and action items, the website is very rich, very populated now with video that you can go to, but also resources and ways to get involved beyond just attending a conference.
Before we actually take a quick break, I have to bring this up because Melissa and I had a conversation, and even Mara, we had a conversation about the same people being at the summit. And I think people that were there, people that are already doing the work, people that we see at every event. What are your thoughts, Melissa, about the diversity of the attendees at the summit?
That's actually one of the things that I tweeted about with regards to my disappointment in seeing the same people. I was actually really rather disappointed with the lack of diversity as far as attendance at the event. Just Food, it works with a number of community organizations around the city, and I'm sure that the borough president's office has a lot of interaction with their constituents, and so, you know, I was really hoping that there would have been more representation, you know, from the Lower East Side, from the South Bronx, from Chinatown, from Harlem, all these people that have been working to improve food access, have been working to improve the condition of undocumented workers in the food service in New York City. I didn't really see that kind of representation there, and I definitely was disappointed in that.
I think a good thing, though, because of Twitter, so many people tweeted about that. The bureau, that meant Scott Stringer's office, and all of us, you become aware of that, how people are really feeling. So there's like a written document or written trail of how people really feel about that. Thank you, guys. We're going to take a short break. And Lexi, you wanted to...
I said I was... The only thing I would add is that it wasn't for lack of outreach. I think the borough president's office and Just Food did focus on, you know, sort of strategically identifying people out in the community boards. And they weren't invited and invited early. So it's just a matter of who's available on a Saturday.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with more on the New York City Food and Climate Summit Wrap-Up Roundtable. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. We're continuing our roundtable discussion on New York City Food and Climate Summit. Our guests are Melissa Danielle. She's a community wellness advocate. Mara Gittleman. She is working on a project mapping and surveying New York City's community gardens. And Lexi Van de Waal. She blogs at Lighthearted Locavore. So let's talk about the Good Food Movement 2009 victories. What are some of the small or larger victories of the local and fresh movement here in New York City and nationally?
Well, one that was really important for me was the legitimacy that community gardens are gaining around the country.
Yes.
That was heavily pushed forward by the Obamas.
We talked about that. One of my first shows, we talked about Michelle Obama and the community garden. So I definitely have to agree with you on that. Lexi, you have?
You know, sort of another thing coming out of Washington is Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food. The
yeah.
Kathleen Merrigan's mm-hmm. behind with the, did anyone see the online Facebook chat that she did?
No.
She's done a couple of them.
Oh, you saw that, Melissa?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. She was really kind of new at the whole thing, and so the woman that was working with her, it was pretty funny to see that exchange, but it definitely did feel like you as a citizen felt included in that process, and so I think that was really helpful.
So was it video, or was it just her doing
it? It was
Facebook?
Live.
It was live video, and then there was a screen on the side where you could anybody could type in a question or a comment. And you could just saw a live stream of that. And then the moderator was picking up the questions and, of course, selecting the ones that she knew to ask.
I saw one cool thing, a small victory. Well, I don't know if it's a victory yet, but I think there's some traction with beekeeping being legal mm-hmm. here.
Yeah.
Something was going on with that last week. Did you hear anything? Do you know any details about that, Melissa?
I just know that the city is in preparation to lift the ban on it. They have, you know, recently just decided that the perceived danger to beekeeping is really non-existent, and that they're going to remove all barriers to it, which I think is excellent and phenomenal for the city's, you know, illegal beekeepers who have been doing some really exciting and fun things around beekeeping and education.
I think we have one. Maybe I shouldn't say that on the air, but I think somewhere in the neighborhood there are beehives here.
There are a few. You know, there are a couple of urban farms in the city who are keeping bees. There are a number of rooftop beekeepers. They give tours. They give classes. So, you know, they're there. They've been doing it. But, you know, it's. I think that because they've been doing such a good job at safety, you know, it's the only time you get in trouble is if someone gets hurt. And
right.
so they've been lucky enough to...
You know, another victory, and this is one that we've talked about here on the show, and I've blogged about it at Food Cultures, is the face of food stamps. I think, and I want to hear you guys' thoughts about the stigma lessening a little bit. I actually blogged about it myself being in college. I received food stamps, and then I've seen two bloggers recently who people, they don't quote unquote fit in the category of someone you would think that receives food stamps. So I think the stigma, tell me, do you guys think the stigma is wearing off about food stamp recipients?
Yeah, I think certainly, you know, now with the economy the way that it's turned, there are a lot more people to go into food stamps. The other thing that sort of in the positive column with food stamps as well as WIC and the Farmers Market Nutrition Program is that states and local governments are making it easier to use food stamps at farmers markets. And New York State is actually the first state with its WIC program to allow fruits and vegetables to be purchased not only at the grocery store, but also at the farmers market.
What are your thoughts, Mayor, about the food stamp stigma?
I mean, I definitely agree. I do think that the stigma is lessening. The variety of people who are applying for food stamps is certainly changing, and I mean, I thought that study was really interesting. I thought that the methodology was really interesting.
Oh, you listened to the show, huh? Or did you read the article about
both.
The black? Okay. Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, just seeing the numbers of people that are on food stamps, the study, I don't know if you've seen the study, Melissa, about black kids or black children or black people are more likely to be on food stamps. It's just a very skewed study, but...
Well, it was also just playing into the dichotomy of just looking at black versus white, and just, you know, I just thought that there was a lot more to be presented and a lot more angles that could have been shown to make it a fuller report.
Totally.
As a former farmer's market manager whose That's job right. it was to run EBT machines, that view definitely, you know, you can see where it kind of is skewed irrationally to one side. I had the opportunity to meet a number of people across all walks of life and ethnic backgrounds during my time running three markets that were EBT markets. And, you know, you just come to understand that, you know, this is a way for people to do the best that they can with what they have, and to also show them that they don't have to sacrifice quality and nutrition, you know, just because they don't have all the means to purchase good, healthy food. And, you know, I had, at my markets, I had repeat customers. You know, we were on a first-name basis. They really felt empowered and validated by being able to use their EBT card at the markets. And I think that the numbers showed that, you know, in 2008, sales had reached $100,000, right. And in 2009, they had surpassed that number by the time the program ended. It is unfortunate that it only runs through New York City's peak season, because there definitely were people who were willing to come back during the winter months to continue using their EBT cards, and some farmers have responded to that by having their own machines, but I definitely feel like we have to let go of the stigma and the sort of like the pride that comes with being able to having to ask for that kind of assistance.
So, Melissa, one last question for all of you, and very quickly, I want you guys to each tell me, what is your wish for 2010 in reference to the Good Food Movement? What is the one thing that you would like to see some traction or someone talk about that hasn't been talked about? Melissa, very quickly, I think we have about 1 minute.
Well, I guess my wish is just for this to be more of a serious conversation on the community level. I find that there are still very many people who are not really concerned with how their food is sourced and who gets affected in the process. And so, for me, I'd like to see a little more mobilization and concern about how we all access our food from seed to table.
And Lexi, what is your wish and hope for 2010?
I have so many. I don't know how to narrow it down. But you know, this is, you know, in terms of it being a policy year, the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act is this year. And there's just so many aspects of that I think that the local food advocates are really pushing hard for in terms of procurement rules and getting more money so that more children, you know, don't go hungry, and really kind of take out a lot of the administrative red tape and turn it into a really great program.
Mara, lastly,
I'll make it fast. The legislation protecting a lot of the community gardens in New York City expires in September 2010.
Yes, it does.
And I'd like to see some really excellent, dare I say, revolutionary new policy.
Definitely. Mara, Lexi, Melissa, I'm going to make sure that we tag all of you guys' Twitter names as well as your websites on Heritage Radio Network, and I'll do a little quick little blog to round up for any of our listeners that want to reach out to you guys. But thank you for joining us on Hot Grease.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thanks so much.
Have a happy holiday and a great 2010.
Yeah.
We'll be back after a short break.
Rosebuds know the bloom in early May. Just as hate knows love's the cure, you can rest your mind assured that I'll be loving you always. Cause now I can't reveal the mystery of tomorrow, but in passing we'll grow older every day.
back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is sponsored by Fairway Markets. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. On the phone, we have Stacy West. Stacy is a regular guest on Hot Grease. We've talked social etiquette and food, Thanksgiving planning, and today she will give the Happy New Year Hot Five. The Hot Five is a rundown of five things on fire in the good food movement. Influencers, farmers, celebrities, business owners, and chefs dish on their favorites. Stacy, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you, Nicole. How are you today?
I am great. So you are going to hit us with the Hot Five for 2010. I think you're going to be doing food, culture, and New Year's.
Yes. I thought I'd do something a little bit different, talk about food and traditions surrounding food and the New Year.
So
around the world, the U.S.
Let's hear number five on your list.
Number five on my list is fish.
Mm. Okay.
In many countries, you know, fish, cod, herring are very important parts of the New Year, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day celebrations. And all of these foods, all of them that I will mention, have a particular meaning or significance. You know, fish is thought to bring fertility and good luck and long life. So, hey, why not? I mean, fish is good. You know, back in the day, it could be preserved and transported, which was a big thing.
I never had fish.
In previous years.
I never had fish growing up in New Year's, but I guess that is I don't recall. You guys?
Yeah, actually, I have. My mom has often actually made fish, fried fish, on New Year's Day and New Year's Eve.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So
we have.
Number four on the Hot Five list.
Number four are grapes.
Mmm.
Now, got a little fruit in here. And this tradition dates back first in Spain back to 1909. It is thought that 12 grapes eaten quickly at the stroke of each of the clock, is to be a predictor of the year ahead.
Really?
Yes. The sweet grapes, of course, represent a sweet month. 12 grapes, 12 months of the year. Sour grape represents maybe a not so great month that you may have during the coming year.
Wow, that is fascinating. Lexi, you're looking like you've heard that one before. Have you?
Grapes I ever had on New Year's were in a glass of champagne.
Wow. Exactly.
So,
well, that would be a cute little spin to do, you know, 12 grapes on a skewer and a champagne flute. Some cute little thing to do.
That would be. So what's number three on the Hot Five?
Number three, noodles or soba. In Japan, noodles are... buckwheat noodles are eaten at midnight on December 31st, and they symbolize longevity. So, of course, the longer the noodle, the better.
Really?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
I wish I had known about all these traditions.
I know, huh?
Yeah. Learned a lot here.
It's a great thing to have a party and, like, have all these different food culture.
Exactly.
Yeah, and have like really cute signs out. That would be great.
Mm. Yes, absolutely.
So what's number two on the Hot Five?
Number two on the Hot Five are greens.
Very
and
Southern.
I'm talking very Southern, but actually in other countries, in Korea, Germany, Romania, greens are very popular for New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. They may not eat collard greens or turnips like we do in the South, but... cabbage is a very big green food that is eaten New Year's Eve and New Year's Day in other countries. And, of course, it is considered lucky because of money. It looks like money. I shouldn't say necessarily looks like money, but the color can symbolize currency and money and wealth for the coming year. So that's one of the things that you need on your plate as well. You need some grains.
And number one on the Happy New Year Hot 5, the final Hot 5 of 2009.
Number one, this one thing is a definite Southern tradition symbolizing humility and good fortune. The roundness of it represents the coin or coin currency, and those are black-eyed peas.
Let me ask you this. I don't know if you know this. So is it just black-eyed peas, or is it any bean or any pea?
Well, I know, like, in Italy, I won't say it's just black-eyed peas. I know black-eyed peas are definitely a Southern tradition, but in Italy, it is customary to eat lentils. So, yes, peas, beans are very important, and it is also because of the round nature of the lentil that symbolizes currency or a coin and is thought to bring wealth to you in the coming year.
Hands down, this has been the most informative Hot 5 of 2009. Stacy, thank you.
You're so welcome.
All of our listeners, if you want to follow Stacy on Twitter, she tweets at Stacy with an E in West on Twitter, and she will be back with us probably in late January or February. But until then, Stacy, thank you for joining us on Hot Grease, and we will talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you. You guys have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Join me every Monday at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. I will be on holiday for about a week or two, so I will be back here on Heritage Radio Network on January 4th, I think. But until then, always take the road less traveled.